Heather Donovan, your boarder or guest. She was just here.
I suppose she qualifies more as a boarder, Danielle said as she sat down. I just ran into her outside. She mentioned earlier she was on her way down here. So, anything new? The chief glanced down at the stack of papers on his desk and gave them a little shove.
I don't know. But whenever I turn around, I find someone else connected to Logan Mitchum.
You don't mean Heather.
Apparently, she hired him to look into Morris and Earthbound Spirits. Something about them getting a hold of her Presley property.
Are you saying Earthbound Spirits is the new owner?
You know about it?
I knew she lost it for back taxes. I had no idea Earthbound Spirits was the new owner. She left that part out.
Apparently. Earthbound Spirits has picked up a number of properties because of unpaid property tax.
According to Heather, she suspected the new owner had done something illegal to get a hold of the property. That's why she talked about hiring a private detective. But I didn't realize she hired someone. I sort of had the impression she didn't have the money.
She hired someone, all right. Kelly Bartley's neighbor. Yet, according to Heather, Mitchum claimed Morris didn't do anything illegal. Earthbound Spirits apparently got the property fair and square.
Danielle leaned back in the chair. I suppose there is a first time for everything.
So why did you stop by? Just to see why we wanted to see Heather?
Danielle smiled. Not particularly, though that's just what Heather suggested. No, the real reason I want to see you this morning is to tell you something I learned last night. Actually, it's someone else with a connection to Mitchum.
Who?
Danielle leaned toward the desk. You know how I told you about Max seeing Arlene go downstairs after Heather went up to her room for the night?
Yes, I've been hesitant about bringing her back in for more questions. At least not right now. I suppose I could say someone claimed to have seen her come downstairs. But who? I'm sure everyone has compared notes by now.
According to my sources, after stabbing Peter Morris, the killer, a man, stashed the knife in the bathroom. Just as he was leaving the bathroom, he ran into Arlene, who had just come downstairs.
She saw the killer?
Not only did she see him, she knew him. Knew him enough that he kissed her before he told her to go back upstairs to bed, shortly before he left.
You're saying Arlene Horton was part of the murder?
Danielle leaned back in her chair and crossed her denim-clad legs. I'm not sure I'd say she was part of the murder, exactly. According to Lucas, she seemed genuinely surprised to find the man downstairs.
Lucas, your deceased husband?
Yeah. Danielle sighed. Lucas is still hanging around. He witnessed the murder.
What does he say happened?
Danielle repeated what Lucas had told her. When she was finished, she and MacDonald sat in silence for a few moments, considering the new information.
We know David has a tie to Peter Morris. He's a Hilton, the youngest grandchild of Helen Hilton, who left her estate to Earthbound Spirits.
And one of the grandchildren involved in the lawsuit against the cult, Danielle added.
Hilton has the motive, the chief muttered.
There is obviously a tie between Arlene and Mitchum, but if there is something romantic between those two, why is she sharing a bed with David? The chief smiled.
It sounds interesting. How long are they staying? I'm a little concerned about them still being with you. It may not be safe, but until I can find something other than testimony from a ghost or cat.
Don't worry about our safety. Walt promised to keep an eye on both of them. But I have this gut feeling that they aren't killers.
Maybe not. But Mitchum is still missing, and it was his fingerprint we found at your house.
Have you talked to Will yet? Danielle asked.
Yes, which now, considering what Heather told me, makes me even more confused about the players in all this.
The chief leaned back in his chair, crossing his arms over his chest. How do you mean?
According to Wayne, Mitchum found evidence Isabella was murdered, which I know is false.
How do you know that?
Because I looked into it again and had someone else review the medical records, and there is no doubt Isabella died of natural causes. Yet according to Wayne, Mitchum offered to hook him up with a hitman to kill Morris. Because according to Mitchum, Morris was so well connected he'd get away with the murder.
You aren't suggesting Will hired Mitchum to kill Morris, are you?
No, according to Wayne, he was more interested in finding out who in the coroner's office was involved in the cover-up. But he backed away from Mitchum after the offer. Plus, the PI never handed over any of the information he claimed to have uncovered. So basically, he expected Wayne to simply take his word for it.
Why would Mitchum lie about something like that? Danielle asked.
I just hope your friend didn't hire Mitchum to kill Morris and just told me all that to throw me off, in case Mitchum screwed up, which he did, and left a clue that would lead us to him.
Danielle shook her head. I just can't believe Will would hire a hitman.
You don't have kids, Danielle.
What does that have to do with it?
If someone hurt one of my boys like that, I honestly don't know what I'd do. In fact, I don't even like to think about it.
No, Will Wayne is a good man.
I'd like to think I'm a good man, too. But when it comes to someone hurting one of my kids, well, anything is possible. It's not as if Peter Morris was a particularly likable man. He had a history of bilking vulnerable people out of money, and if Wayne honestly believed he had Isabella killed, it wouldn't surprise me.
So why haven't you arrested him yet?
Aside from the fact I keep tripping over other people connected to Mitchum who also have motives, I think it would be premature. I really don't want to repeat your cousin's murder investigation.
Danielle knew what he was talking about. Several people, including herself, were arrested for Cheryl's murder before the real killer was arrested. Danielle listed off the current suspects. So far there's Heather, Arlene, David, if you consider his connection to Mitchum through Arlene and his history with earthbound spirits, and then there's Will.
You forget Kelly.
Kelly? Sure, she's his neighbor, but she didn't have a reason to kill Morris.
Sure she did.
What are you talking about? Danielle asked.
What's our agreement, Danielle?
The chief asked. Danielle let out a sigh. What you tell me in confidence about an ongoing case cannot go any further than you and me unless you give me permission to tell someone like Lily or Walt, and I'll be your spiritual informer.
Spiritual informer?
The chief smiled. Or is it spiritual snitch? She asked.
Okay, whatever. But for now, you need to keep this between us. If Kelly happens to tell you herself, pretend like it's the first time you've heard it.
Danielle frowned. Heard what?
Kelly believes Peter Morris was responsible for her roommate's suicide. Not much different from Cleve's suicide, yet in this case it was primarily about money.
Money?
The young woman had an inheritance from her grandmother. She was troubled. Morris convinced her to move on to paradise. And oh, by the way, leave me your money so I can continue to help other girls like you.
Damn. Danielle shook her head in disgust. We should be giving Logan Mitchum a medal instead of finding him so we can throw him in prison.
I know how you feel, believe me.
So now what? Danielle asked.
Now I'd like to learn more about the connection between Mitchum and Arlene. I'd also like to figure out how Hilton plays into all this.
It's interesting how all roads seem to lead back to Mitchum. But how did all these people happen to hire the same private detective? What are the odds of that? 27. Chief McDonald sat with Brian Henderson and Joe Morelli in his office, discussing the Morris murder. Danielle had left 15 minutes earlier. MacDonald felt frustration in not being able to share what he knew about Arlene and Mitchum. But how could he possibly tell his men a ghost over at Marlowe House happened to see the killer kiss Arlene?
"Did Danielle have anything new that might help us?" Joe asked.
"Not really." The chief closed the file folder he had just been sorting through and tossed it on his desk.
"Does Danielle still have a full house?" Joe asked.
"I understand Chris Johnson moved out this morning."
"It's about time."
Ignoring Joe's comment, the chief said,
"I think we need to take a closer look at Arlene Horton and David Hilton. After all, we know Hilton has a history with Morris, one he didn't disclose in our interview."
Brian thumbed through a file, reviewing his notes.
"While I agree we need to take a closer look at everyone, I think the ones we need to focus on right now are those with a direct tie to Mitchum. Heather was the last one to see Morris alive, and she admits to hiring Mitchum. Kelly has a motive, connection to Mitchum, and she admits to being outside the house around the time of the murder. If Heather hired Mitchum to kill Morris, why do it where she's staying?" Joe asked. "I think the one with the most compelling motive is Will Wayne. I'd like to find out more about how Wayne happened to hire the same private detective as Heather," Brian said. "Maybe there's some connection between Heather and Wayne. Talk to the nurse who supposedly recommended Mitchum to Wayne. See what she knows," the chief told him.
Carol Barnes sat alone in a booth at Pier Cafe, waiting for Officer Brian Henderson to join her. She glanced at her watch. They had agreed to meet at the cafe. It would allow Carol time to grab something to eat before she had to be at her appointment. The server was just bringing Carol her lunch when a man wearing a police uniform entered the cafe. Assuming he was Brian Henderson, she waved him over to her table.
"Are you Carol Barnes?" the officer asked when he reached her table.
"Yes. Are you Officer Henderson?"
"Yes. I appreciate you meeting with me on such short notice," Brian said as he took a seat across from her.
Carol looked apologetically at the plate of food before her. "I hope you don't mind, but I ordered myself something to eat. I've an appointment in an hour and missed breakfast."
"That's fine." Brian removed a small notepad from his pocket. "Please, eat. We can talk while you have lunch."
The server who had brought Carol's food returned to the table. She looked at Brian.
"Would you like to order something?"
"Just coffee, please."
When they were alone, Carol asked,
"So, how can I help you?"
"I understand you referred Logan Mitchum to Will Wayne," Brian began.
"The private detective?"
Carol picked up her sandwich.
"Yes. How do you know him?"
"Oh, I don't know him. Never met him before."
Carol took a bite of her sandwich.
"If you've never met him, how did you happen to refer him to Mr. Wayne?"
"As you probably already know, I'm one of the nurses who works with Mr. Wayne's wife, Karen." Carol set her sandwich back on her plate. "I suppose, technically speaking, she's his ex-wife. But considering how good he is to her, she might as well be his wife. I've gotten to know Mr. Wayne. We've spent a lot of time talking. When he told me about his daughter and the phone calls he received..." Carol paused a moment and looked up into Brian's eyes.
"Do you know about the phone calls?" "Are you referring to the anonymous caller who claimed Peter Morris had Isabella killed?"
Carol nodded and took a quick bite of her sandwich. A moment later, she said,
"I was at the house when he got one of the calls. He was pretty upset. I asked him what was wrong, if there was anything I could do. The poor man, he just broke down. You have to understand, it can be very stressful taking care of a loved one with Alzheimer's, even when you have help like Mr. Wayne does. It's emotionally draining. And then to learn someone might have murdered his daughter."
The server brought Brian his coffee and then left the table. Brian asked Carol,
"Did you ever suggest he go to the police?"
I did, at first, but he felt no one would listen to him if he didn't have some tangible proof. After all, the coroner's office ruled his daughter's death was from natural causes.
So you recommended Mitchum?
Yes, considering the circumstances. I felt Mr. Mitchum was the best choice for him.
How was that? I thought you said you had never met Mr. Mitchum before.
Someone on the chat board recommended Mitchum. Told me if I wanted to hire a private detective to investigate earthbound spirits. He was the only one to use because he'd been investigating earthbound spirits for a number of years, helping people whose family members got sucked into the group.
What chat board?
Ah, I suppose I should explain. Carol placed her partially eaten sandwich back on her plate and took a sip of water. I used to work at the hospital, and one of the other nurses got involved with earthbound spirits. I'd just moved into the area and had never heard of them before. So when Cora started talking about them, I was curious. I'm not a churchy person, and some of the things she told me sounded interesting.
Are you saying you got involved with earthbound spirits?
Carol let out a short laugh and shook her head.
Heavens, no. But I'll admit I was intrigued.
Not curious enough to go to one of the rallies Cora tried to get me to attend, but I wanted to know more about them. So I went online. That's when I came across the forum on cults and an ongoing discussion about earthbound spirits. Brian remembered what Heather had told him.
Someone on the forum mentioned Mitchum?
Not on the forum, exactly, but in a private message. No one on the forum uses their real names, but one of the regular posters, someone who goes by Cult Curious, sent me a private message. I'd been discussing Cora on the forum, but I never mentioned her name or where she worked, just that I was concerned about her after reading what everyone was saying about the group.
What did Cult Curious say in the private message?
He told me if I wanted to help my friend, or if her family needed some way to get her away from the group, I should contact Logan Mitchum. I figure everyone has a right to whatever wacky religion they want to follow. So I told Cult Curious, thanks, but that I had no intention of contacting the private investigator. But then later, when Mr. Wayne told me about his daughter and his concerns, I remembered the private message and gave Mr. Wayne the private investigator's name.
Do you still frequent the forum? Brian asked.
No. I surfed around on the site for about a week and chatted there for a couple of days. But then I switched jobs and didn't see Cora again. That was about 6 months ago. Carol shrugged. I didn't think too much about earthbound spirits after that.
And you remembered Logan Mitchum's name?
Heavens, no, Carol laughed. I told Mr. Wayne about the private detective I'd heard about, and then I logged back into the chat room. I'd never deleted my private messages, so it was fairly easy to pull out the old message with the detective's name.
Both Heather Donovan and Will Wayne found Logan Mitchum through the same chat room. In both instances, someone with the handle Cult Curious recommended Mitchum, Brian told Joe and McDonald as the three men sat in the break room eating lunch.
After Brian detailed his interview with Carol Barnes, Joe set his burger on a napkin and picked up his cell phone. He opened a browser and ran a quick search. Looking up to Brian, he asked,
"Did you find out the name of this forum or chat room? The one Cult Curious hangs out in?"
After Brian gave Joe the website's name, Joe asked, "Why hasn't Kelly Bartley mentioned this chat room?" The chief looked over at Joe.
"Why would she? She met Mitchum because he's her neighbor."
"Or so she says." Joe popped a French fry in his mouth.
"What do you mean?" Brian asked. "We know he lives downstairs from her." "Kelly claims to be researching earthbound spirits for the exposé Ian's working on. If that's true, then she has to be familiar with this website. It's one of the first links that come up when I did my search on earthbound spirits and complaints."
The chief shrugged.
She probably knows about the website, but the fact that she didn't mention it doesn't really have a bearing on the case.
How do you figure that, chief? Joe asked. Kelly claimed she had no idea Mitchum was a private detective working on cases trying to uncover dirt on Morris and his group. Who's to say she wasn't given Mitchum's name when she posted on the group, just like Heather and the nurse?
What makes you think she posted on the forum? The chief asked. Come on, seriously? There is no way she missed this website. And since she's researching the group, what better place to hook up with others who have stories about earthbound spirits than this forum? Which means she'd be asking questions.
Let's say she has posted on the site. There's no reason to jump to the conclusion that Colt Curious sent her a private message like he did with several others, the chief reminded him.
I agree, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't look into it.
Joe studied the chief for a moment.
I don't get you, chief. This isn't like you. I think you'd be the first to check out Kelly's browser history. See if she had more of a connection to our missing PI than just being his neighbor.
You're thinking she may have hired him to kill Morris? Brian asked.
I think it's something we need to look into.
Joe popped another French fry into his mouth. The chief sat quietly at the table, thinking about what Danielle had told him earlier about Arlene Horton. That was the real reason he felt Joe's focus on Kelly was wasted energy. He was about to ask Joe just how did Kelly know Morris was going to be at Marlowe House, when he realized the same question could be asked of Arlene. Of course, according to Danielle, her husband's ghost claimed Arlene seemed surprised the private detective was at Marlowe House. With a groan, MacDonald pressed the heel of his right hand against his forehead.
"You all right, chief?" Brian asked.
"This case is giving me a headache."
Page after page filled the laser printer's tray while Ian stood, smiling down at the machine. Lily walked into his home office, carrying two cups of coffee. She handed him one and then took a sip from the remaining cup.
"So this is it?" she asked.
"The article, anyway. I need to go through it and approve the editor's changes," he explained.
"I can't wait to read it. I know Danielle's really anxious to. Are you going to make us wait until the article comes out in the magazine?"
"Maybe it would be better if you didn't read the article and wait until the book comes out in a couple months," Ian teased.
"Yeah, right. Like that's happening," Lily laughed.
"I intend to read both the article and the book." Ian wrapped his arm around Lily's shoulder and gave her a quick squeeze.
"I appreciate your support."
"Hey, this story was my idea. I'm just thrilled you thought it was a good one. This is kind of an extra Valentine's Day gift. The article version of the Emma Jackson story back from the editor."
Ian gave her cheek a quick kiss.
"Does that mean I don't need to give you anything else for Valentine's Day?"
Playfully nudging him with her elbow, she said,
"I don't think so."
"Guys..." Kelly interrupted a moment later. Ian and Lily looked to the doorway where Kelly stood. "I don't think I can leave today."
"That's fine, Kelly."
Ian studied his sister for a moment.
"Is something wrong?"
"I just got a call from Brian Henderson. They want me to come back in. They need to ask me more questions," she said dully, her eyes filling with tears.
"Kelly, maybe I should go with you," Ian suggested.
"Do you think I need a lawyer?"
28. Damp and frigid, the sea breeze intensified, morphing into a robust gust that dislodged Danielle's braid. Brushing errant strands behind her ear, she hurried to the front door, pulling the jacket tight around her body. Before she had time to knock on the door, it swung open. Without a second thought, she rushed inside the beach bungalow. Chris slammed the door closed behind her.
"Not the best day to move."
"It's freezing out there. The wind just came out of nowhere." Danielle shivered. She immediately walked across the room and looked out the back sliding glass door. The house boasted an unobstructed view of the ocean. I sure wouldn't get tired of this view.
It's really something, isn't it?
Chris asked, standing beside her.
I'd offer you some hot coffee or something, but I haven't gone to the store yet.
That's okay. I'm coffeeed out. No longer shivering, she glanced around the room. You know, this furniture isn't bad.
The place has everything, fully furnished, linens, pots, and pans.
Not everything. It doesn't have coffee, Danielle grinned.
You said you didn't want coffee.
Oh, I'm just teasing. I've already exceeded today's coffee quota. But you know, a house is not a home until there's food in the fridge.
Like I said, I haven't gone to the store yet.
You need minions, Chris. You can afford them.
Minions?
Chris laughed. Sure, to do all your mundane tasks, like clean your house and buy your groceries. Chris cocked his brows.
Do you have minions?
I have Joanne, but I really wouldn't call her a minion.
And then there's Lily.
Danielle laughed. I think Lily and I take turns being each other's minion. One day it's her, the next it's me.
Very democratic of you, Chris grinned.
He then asked seriously,
Did you talk to the chief yet?
Yeah, I stopped over there this morning right after I left the house.
Have you been there all this time?
No, I had some errands to run. Thought I'd stop by here before heading back home.
Hope you don't mind. Don't be goofy. You're always welcome. So what did the chief say?
Chris led the way over to the leather sectional facing the sliding glass door. They both sat down. I think you would have been happier if I'd had something more tangible on Arlene, aside from according to my dead husband. Chris leaned back in the sectional, propping one of his legs over his opposing knee.
He'll have to take what you have. I'm just glad Joanne admitted to putting my knife in the parlor. I still think your pal Joe would love to hang this one on me.
I don't know what Joe's problem is.
I do, Chris said under his breath.
Danielle flashed Chris a reproving smirk. Oh, please, I've had my issues with Joe, but I don't believe for a minute he would ever try to hang a murder conviction on someone over jealousy.
He arrested you for murder, Chris reminded her.
I know, how can I forget? You and Walt keep reminding me. But Joe arrested me because he sincerely believed I'd killed my cousin. He didn't arrest me out of spite because he was jealous.
So you do admit he's jealous?
Well, Danielle sighed. He does keep asking me out for Valentine's Day. I'd really hoped he and I would just move on to a friendship phase and he'd stop trying to rekindle our non-existent romance.
You could have simply told him you already had a date for Valentine's Day.
Chris flashed Danielle a boyish grin. She smiled. If my life wasn't so complicated right now, between a murder in my parlor, a house full of suspects, and Lucas's spirit rambling around Marlowe House, I might be tempted to take you up on that Valentine's Day date. How about a rain check?
I'd like that.
They sat in silence for a few moments until Chris finally asked,
So what's next in the investigation, do you think?
I know they're still trying to track down the private detective.
Do they think he's taken off?
Danielle shrugged.
I don't know. It sure looks like he's the one who killed Morris. After all, it was his fingerprint, and Lucas saw a man kill Morris.
I have to assume that man was Mitchum. The chief hasn't been all that sherry with me on the details. I just know they're still looking for him, so I have to assume they're watching his condo and office.
I really don't like the idea of Arlene and David staying at Marlowe House. When are they leaving?
They paid for the entire weekend. I expect they'll take off tomorrow by noon. Not sure what their plans are tonight. We're not offering anything for dinner like we did over Christmas.
I'll just feel better knowing they're no longer there, especially since you and Lily are alone, with me here now.
Danielle laughed. Hardly alone. We have Walt, and he's promised to keep an eye on them. And don't forget Heather.
Heather? She's not on my list of favorites after she tossed me under the bus.
I have to admit she did seem quick to point the finger at you when the cops were looking for a murder suspect.
We're forgetting someone else you have over there.
That's right. Lucas, Danielle sighed. Chris started to say something when the doorbell rang. He jumped up from the couch and headed to the door.
I come bringing pizza, Adam announced when Chris opened the front door. And champagne.
Adam held a pizza box in one hand and a bottle of champagne in the other. As he entered the room and Chris shut the door, Danielle stood up from the sectional to greet him.
I saw your car out there,
Adam told Danielle as he walked into the kitchen and set his housewarming gifts on the kitchen counter.
I almost didn't come in.
Danielle stood by the kitchen sink, watching Chris open the box of pizza. She glanced to Adam and asked, "Why wouldn't you come in?"
"Well, you know."
Adam looked from Danielle to Chris, back to Danielle, a smirk on his face while wiggling his eyebrows.
"Oh," Danielle scowled. "Always with a dirty mind."
"I'm starved," Chris told them, snatching up a slice of pizza and taking a bite. Danielle studied Adam for a minute. "Just how do you do that?"
"What?"
Adam tucked a napkin under a slice of pizza and handed it to Danielle.
"Have an active imagination?"
"No. Wiggle your eyebrows like that." She took a bite of the pizza, still looking at Adam. Once again, his dark brows wiggled.
"It's a gift,"
Adam said with a dramatic sigh. He took a slice of pizza for himself.
"Please, tell me you brought beer," Chris said, picking up the bottle of champagne and looking at it. "Actually, I did. It's still in the car. I'll be right back."
Still holding his slice of pizza, Adam dashed outside.
"Wow, you're a demanding client. The guy comes with pizza and champagne, and all you say is, 'Where's the beer?'" Danielle teased.
"It is all about priorities, Danielle.
Priorities." When Adam returned with the beer a few minutes later, he sat with Danielle and Chris at the kitchen table.
"I really do want to thank you for bringing the pizza and beer. And the champagne."
Chris took a swig of beer.
"I figured the pizza and beer were to celebrate your new home. The champagne is for another celebration."
Adam lifted his can of beer in mock salute.
"I got it?" Chris asked.
Danielle glanced from Adam to Chris.
"You got what?"
"The Gusaroff estate," Adam explained. "They accepted his offer."
"Wow, that's great."
Danielle lifted her can of beer. "Congratulations."
"Thanks. I haven't even been in it yet." "Want me to take you over there today?" Adam offered.
"I just hope the place isn't haunted," Danielle murmured as she took another sip of beer.
Adam stood up.
"Funny, Danielle."
Tossing his napkin onto the table, he headed for the bathroom. When Adam was out of earshot, Chris asked,
"Haunted? Are you trying to be funny?"
Danielle wrinkled her nose and cringed.
"Well, actually, when I agree it would be a great building for you, I didn't stop to consider it's always possible. Well..."
"Possible what?"
"Stoddard was murdered there."
Of course, he never haunted his own place. He decided to torment me instead. And after he realized I wasn't responsible for his death, well, I'm pretty sure he moved on. But still, she took another sip of her beer. You saying Stoddard's ghost might be at the estate? Danielle considered the possibility for a moment. Finally, she shook her head. Nah, probably not. After all, I don't remember seeing his ghost there. Just Darlene's.
Darlene? His wife?
Yeah, but you don't have anything to worry about there. She's busy haunting Pilgrim's Point. Chris glared at Danielle.
If you got me to buy a haunted house... Danielle smiled.
Nah, I'm just teasing you. It's not haunted. She took a quick gulp of beer and thought, I hope it's not haunted. When Adam returned from the bathroom a few minutes later, Danielle changed the subject. Hey, Adam, you know your friend Arlene, the one staying at Marlowe House?
Sure. What about her?
Adam sat back down at the table. Any idea how long she's been with David?
You asking because of his last name? Adam asked.
Danielle shrugged. What are the chances Helen Hilton's grandson being at Marlowe House the same time Peter Morris is murdered?
I'd assume the police have talked to him already.
Honestly, I have no idea. Danielle sighed.
I know, it's a bizarre coincidence. And frankly, I know zip about this Hilton guy other than reading about the family when the lawsuit was going on. But that was a number of years ago, and if a guy has the patience to wait around before killing the man who screwed his family out of a fortune, I'd have to assume he'd have a better alibi. Something other than I was sleeping upstairs.
What about Arlene?
What about her?
Did she have any grievances against the group? Adam frowned at Danielle.
Where's this coming from?
She's just trying to cover all the bases, Chris offered.
Adam, you have no idea how stressful all of this has been. Waking up to find a dead body in the next room tends to make one paranoid.
I'm not paranoid, Danielle muttered. Chris patted her hand.
You know what I mean.
In response, Danielle rolled her eyes at Chris.
Maybe Arlene had some issues with the group, but she'd never hurt anyone. I know her better than that, Adam insisted.
How well do we really know anyone, especially casual friends? Danielle asked.
We weren't casual friends, Adam confessed.
When you said she was someone you knew when dating Isabella, I assumed she was a casual friend. So you and Isabella were close to Arlene?
Not exactly.
Adam set his beer can on the table.
Arlene and I had a brief affair back when I was dating Isabella.
Chris paused mid-sip. Still holding the can of beer by his mouth, he looked at Adam, who was now looking from Danielle to him. Before taking a swig of beer, Chris said,
Hey, don't look at me. Who am I to judge?
Oh, Danielle cringed. Sorry, I didn't mean to pry.
Sure you did.
Adam flashed her a half smile.
Isabella and I were having some issues. She was getting deeper and deeper into earthbound spirits. I needed someone to talk to. Arlene was there. One thing led to another.
Was that when you two broke up? Danielle asked.
Adam shook his head. No, I stayed with Isabella. But we broke up not long after that. She never knew about Arlene. And I didn't see Arlene again until Thursday morning.
29.
Ian, you and Lily need to wait out here while Joe talks to your sister, the chief explained when Ian, Lily, and Kelly arrived at the Frederickport Police Department.
Is Kelly under arrest?
Ian asked, just as Joe stepped into the room.
Under arrest?
Kelly gasped. Joe frowned at Ian.
Why would you ask that?
Ian reached out and gave his sister's hand a gentle squeeze.
I just don't see why I can't sit in with her while you question her.
Ian, this really will go much quicker if you just let Kelly go in with Joe, McDonald said.
If I'm not under arrest, does that mean I can just leave now?
Kelly asked, sounding more confident than she had looked just moments earlier.
Yes, I suppose so, the chief said, but I really hope you don't do that.
Okay, Kelly said, no longer holding on to Ian's hand.
I'll talk to Sergeant Morelli alone.
You sure, Kel? Ian asked.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
I want to thank you for coming back in, Joe said after he closed the door and gestured toward the table.
I just want you to know if I don't like your questions, I'll get up and leave. Do you understand?
Kelly took a seat. Joe tossed his notebook onto the table and looked at her for a moment before sitting down.
I'd say that's rather a shift in attitude compared to when you first walked in the door.
I just don't like being bullied, Kelly said primly.
I don't believe anyone has bullied you, Ms. Bartley.
Ms. Bartley? What happened to Kelly?
I was under the impression you might take offense to an informal greeting.
Just because I'm not going to let you bully me, you don't have to pretend you don't even know me.
Joe let out a weary sigh.
I'm not pretending anything.
I know all about that two-way mirror.
Kelly nodded toward the mirror.
I also know how you arrested Danielle for her cousin's murder when she was innocent.
I regret any pain I caused Danielle, and I believe she knows that. I'm not here to pass judgment on you, Kelly. I simply want to ask you a few questions.
Fine, because I didn't have anything to do with Peter Morris's death. Just because I didn't like the man doesn't mean I killed him. Heck, there are lots of people I dislike, and I've never killed any of them.
Joe smiled.
I'm happy to hear that.
He pulled out his cell phone and opened his browser window.
Could you please tell me if you're familiar with this website?
He showed her his cell phone. Leaning forward, she looked closely at the small monitor.
Why, sure, that's the website on cults. They have a thread about earthbound spirits.
Joe set the phone down.
So you're familiar with the site?
Kelly shrugged and visibly relaxed.
Sure. Is that why you brought me in here? To ask me about that website?
She leaned forward again.
Oh, I get it. You want to use it to locate people who had it out for Peter Morris. I bet you'll find a bunch.
Is there a reason you didn't mention the website when you spoke to us earlier?
Kelly frowned.
Why would I do that? You didn't ask me for a list of websites. I told you I did research for Ian. You knew he was doing an expose on earthbound spirits.
Does this mean you're familiar with Cult Curious?
Oh, Cult Curious. Yeah, he's a regular on there.
Have you two ever exchanged private messages?
No, never. But I'm pretty sure he has with other posters.
Why is that? Joe asked.
Every once in a while, someone will post something like, "Thank you, Cult Curious," or "You're the best, Cult Curious," but it's never something in response to a previous post. So I have to assume it's in response to something they talked about in private.
What kind of things did you post about on the board? I assume you posted there.
At first, I mainly read it. The different members share their stories, you know, about how some friend or relative got sucked into the cult, or how someone they knew turned over all their money to earthbound spirits, stuff like that.
Did you ever post?
After a while, when I wanted to ask a question, I didn't really share on the board.
You never discussed your friend Candace?
Yes, but never publicly. Only in private message.
Why only in private message?
Anyone can join that site and read what people are posting. I was there to find others who've been hurt by Morris's group. I wasn't there to vent or find support. When I messaged someone from the group, I was always upfront with them. I let them know I was working on a story about the cult, and then I would share a little bit about Candace's story without getting into specifics. I just wanted them to know I understood. That way they were more inclined to share.
Did anyone ever suggest you hire a private detective?
Kelly frowned. You mean someone like Mitch?
Joe paused and studied Kelly. I thought you didn't know what he did for a living.
Danielle told me after you talked to me the last time. She recognized his name and told me Will Wayne had hired someone by that name to investigate Peter Morris.
Well, did anyone? Joe asked.
Kelly frowned. Did anyone what?
Suggest you hire a private detective to help you with the article?
Kelly shifted uncomfortably in the chair, fidgeting with her purse.
So, someone did suggest you hire a private detective. Someone did mention Mitchum to you, is that it?
Kelly let out a sigh. No, of course not.
Then what is it?
I guess I sort of gave some of them the impression I was a private detective. After all, I was researching earthbound spirits. I didn't say that exactly, but a couple people sort of got that idea.
Was this on the open board or in a private message?
Only in the private messages. So you see, why would they suggest I hire someone if they assume that's what I did for a living?
Did you ever have any contact with Cult Curious?
Kelly shook her head. I told you I never exchanged messages with him, and I don't remember ever responding directly to any of his posts, although a couple times he responded to mine.
How do you know Cult Curious is a male? Or do you?
I don't really. I suppose it could be a girl. Why are you so interested in Cult Curious?
I really can't say it this time.
I do remember one thing, Kelly said hesitantly.
What?
Once I was in a private chat with one of the regulars there, JoJo45, and she told me Cult Curious had asked about me in a private chat. I guess he wanted to know what my deal was, since I'd asked questions on the board, but never shared any stories.
Did he share his stories?
Kelly shook her head. No, not really. After JoJo45 told me what Cult Curious had asked her about, I asked her the same question about him, which now that I think about it is probably why I think of Cult Curious as a guy, because JoJo45 referred to him that way. Anyway, according to JoJo45, Cult Curious had been an Earthbound Spirits member, but soon became disillusioned with a group. She never said that anything particularly bad had happened to him. He never claimed to lose a bunch of money or anything.
So, JoJo45 was a woman?
Kelly smiled. Yeah, I know because during one of our private chats, she shared how she was a new grandma.
What was your handle?
Mine?
Kelly B.
Lily stood up. I'll be right back.
Cell phone in hand, Ian remained seated, silently surfing the internet.
Without looking up, he mumbled, "Okay."
Lily's first stop was the chief's office, but he wasn't there. Walking down the corridor of the inner offices of the police department, she got a few inquiring glances from staff members, yet no one asked her where she was going or who she was looking for. She found Chief McDonald in the break room, pouring himself a cup of coffee.
"Hey, Chief," Lily greeted him when she entered the room.
"How did you get in here?" he asked.
"Your security sucks."
The chief smiled. "You come to say goodbye?"
"Not until Joe's done with Kelly."
"He is. Kelly left the interrogation room a few minutes ago."
The chief took a sip of his coffee. Lily frowned.
"I didn't see her."
"I heard her ask Joe where the bathroom was. She was probably in there."
"Were you in the interrogation room with her and Joe?"
The chief smiled and took another sip.
"Oh, I get it. What's with you guys? A bunch of voyeurs."
The chief laughed.
"What was all this about? Why are you dragging Kelly down here when it's Arlene you should be interviewing?" Lily asked in a whisper.
"Danielle told you?"
"Yes, before she left this morning. Told me about Lucas and what he saw."
"Damn, it must be insane living in Marlowe House."
Lily rolled her eyes.
"You have no idea."
"About Arlene, you have to understand. I can't very well drag her down here based on something Danielle's dead husband told her."
"Does that mean you're just going to ignore it and harass poor Kelly?"
"Don't be dramatic, Lily. No one is harassing Kelly. And your boyfriend and his sister did mislead us during the first interviews."
"I know, Ian regrets that. But you have to understand, it's his job."
"Yes, and I have my job. I've a murder to solve, one that happened under your roof."
"Don't you think I know that? What about Arlene? For goodness sake, she kissed the man who killed Peter Morris."
"According to Danielle, he kissed her."
"Whatever," Lily shrugged.
"Don't worry, Lily, I'm not ignoring Arlene. For the moment, I'm just trying to assemble as much information as I can."
"Any word on that Mitchum dude?"
"No, he still hasn't shown up."
Lily's phone began to buzz. She looked at it.
"It's Ian. He's waiting out front with Kelly."
"I imagine you want to get out of here. It is Valentine's Day."
"Yeah. Ian had planned something romantic at his house, but it looks like he'll have a houseguest for another night. Thanks to you."
"I'm sorry, Lily."
"Yeah." Lily shrugged. "You and Carol Ann doing anything special for Valentine's Day?"
"We have a late dinner reservation and a babysitter set up for the kids."
"Well, have fun."
"You too, Lily."
30. Chief McDonald remembered a time when investigating a suspect didn't involve sitting in front of a computer, searching through social media sites. When he first started in law enforcement, the small community he worked for at the time didn't even have internet access. While he would normally assign someone from his office to search for information on a person of interest, he felt this particular job was best left to him, considering he was unable to share with his people what he knew about Arlene Horton. Focusing his attention on the computer monitor, he reached for his coffee cup and then took a sip.
The cold coffee made him cringe. Instead of spitting it out, he reluctantly swallowed and set the mug back onto the desk, shoving it aside. Turning his attention back to the search, he clicked one more time, only to find an answer to one of his questions. Did Arlene Horton have a personal grudge against Peter Morris?
Damn, he muttered to the silent room. That's a pretty good motive for murder.
McDonald didn't stop there. He continued the online search, moving next to the chat website that Kelly, Heather, and Carol had used. It was almost 4 o'clock p.m. on Valentine's Day when he turned off his monitor and called Brian and Joe into his office.
I finished reading through the postings on the Cult Watch website, Joe announced, when he and Brian entered McDonald's office. Kelly was telling the truth. No back and forth between her handle and Cole Curious.
Both Joe and Brian took a seat.
I haven't gotten far in tracking down the identity of Cole Curious, Brian added, but I created a profile there. Chatted it up a bit with a few people. They're all talking about Morris's murder. Cult Curious hasn't posted since Wednesday morning. Did you notice the handle Justice Now? Joe asked.
Brian nodded.
Yes, I was going to mention it. Justice Now's story sure sounds like the one Kelly told about her roommate.
Kelly never said anything about her friend's sister being a member on the forum, and Justice Now was a pretty active member. I can only think of one reason why Kelly wouldn't mention it. Because she's Justice Now, Joe suggested.
You think Kelly created two handles? Brian asked.
Seems all three of us have been surfing the same site.
The chief picked up a stack of papers on his desk and shuffled through them, making two piles.
You too? Joe asked. I rather thought you'd be heading out early. You don't normally work on Saturday, and it is Valentine's Day. Don't you have something special planned with Carol Ann?
A late dinner. I have plenty of time to make it. But first we need to stop at Marlowe House.
Brian frowned.
Marlowe House? We? As in the three of us?
The chief looked at Brian.
I think you should be there. What's this about? Joe asked. I've been taking a closer look at Arlene Horton, the chief explained.
Arlene Horton? You talking about Hilton's girlfriend? Joe asked.
The chief nodded.
It appears we didn't take a close enough look into her background. Of all our suspects...
Arlene is a suspect? Brian interrupted.
Maybe Hilton's accomplice. Of all the persons of interest, Arlene has the most compelling motive, the chief explained.
More compelling than Will Wayne?
He believes Morris killed his daughter. I can't imagine a better motive, Brian said.
What about Kelly? If she had a second handle, then she lied to us about talking with Cult Curious on the site. By the back and forth between those two, it's obvious Justice Now and Cult Curious exchange private messages.
Let's put Kelly on the back burner for now, the chief said. As for Wayne, I agree his motive trumps Arlene's even if Isabella died of natural causes. Because Wayne doesn't know that, McDonald said.
Joe frowned.
Then why do you say she has the most compelling motive?
More compelling when you consider she was at the scene of the crime, the chief explained.
True, but Kelly was just across the street, and she initially lied to us about being outside the house around the time of the murder, Joe reminded him. And she has a reason to hate Morris.
Perhaps, but I think we need to take a closer look at Arlene Horton.
He then went on to explain Arlene's motive for killing Morris, while handing each man a stack of the papers.
I don't understand, Joe muttered. I checked out Arlene's background. She's an only child, grew up in Vancouver, Washington. Her father...